You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Everyone, good morning and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This right here is Nick Wright. We have a great show for you today. Tom Brady is as excited as ever for the season to start, even though he's 41. The Sixers locked up Ben Simmons, even though he's got no jump shot. And Anthony Davis is not discussing the future, even though the present makes him very happy. Are you acting out the...
No, okay. Yeah, Chris doing a little game of charades to start the show.
Sometimes we need it. That's where we're going to start this morning. With a little Anthony Davis, who is thrilled to be a member of the Los Angeles Lakers, but what position he'll play, what number he will wear, and for how long, well, that has created quite the buzz of late. AD saying, quote, "I'm just focused on this season. I don't know what's going to happen whenever the season's over, hopefully around, you know, mid-June after we just had a parade. I need a couple of days to think, then we can talk about that. But until then, I'm trying to do whatever I can to help this team win this year." All right, Nick, start with you. Is this season championship or bust for the Lakers?
The only reason it could possibly be championship or bust is if you believe Anthony Davis is a one-year rental. And Anthony Davis is not a one-year rental. Anthony Davis has not signed a long-term extension because it would not be in his interest to sign any type of extension, be it a two-year or a four-year or the max amount of years until this coming offseason. Anthony Davis is taking the approach that we saw Kawhi take, the approach we've seen LeBron take in the past, which is we'll deal with free agency when we get to free agency. But right now I'm focused on this year. So assuming that Anthony Davis is going to be on the Lakers for this season and a minimum of the next 3 to 5 years after, of course it's not championship or bust this year. They will have Anthony Davis, the best big man in basketball, over the next half decade. And even if you don't believe LeBron is the best player in the league anymore, I don't think there's anyone that thinks he's not one of the five best, and that even if he deteriorates from there over the next few years, you're going to have Anthony Davis and one of the five best, one of the 10 best, one of the 15 best players in the league alongside him over the next 3 years. So I would argue there is a championship or bust window of the next 3 years that LeBron is under contract. If they don't win a title together, this will be considered a failure. But this season, they have championship aspirations, but it's not the level of, if they don't win it this year, they wouldn't have traded for Anthony Davis. They wouldn't have done it all over again the way they did.
Yeah, and when he decided not to sign the extension with the Pelicans knew ultimately, yes, we have to trade him. But also, I know from the Knicks were informed that if they do trade for Anthony Davis, he's not going to sign an extension. So your fan base, so we even see now in L.A., I know verbally from the Knicks that they got a heads up. He's not going to sign an extension. So that was one of the reasons why they couldn't make their best offer, because he's not going to sign an extension. Your fan base is going to go through this. Is he going to stay? With the reality, ultimately, he wanted to be in Los Angeles. So now he's in Los Angeles, and he's doing the same thing that he would have done to any other team that would have traded for him. This is their business strategy. They're doing the right thing. Put it to the offseason. It's not title or bust. He's going to be playing for some titles with the Lakers. I think the Lakers, Rob Pelinka, Jenny Buss, they will have constant pressure to try to win a championship. They have LeBron first, got AD, and they will continue to tinker with their roster as long as AD is on the roster. So it's not my belief that they must win this year to call it a success or to be able to sign AD. Where else is he going to go? He doesn't want to go back to Chicago, where he's from and everything.
Well, that's the thing, is he got traded to the place he wanted to be, the place he makes his offseason home. The Lakers don't have a long history of losing free agents, of having guys come there and then be like, I don't want to be here anymore. I know that happened with 26-year-old All-NBA center Dwight Howard, and now some people are worried what will happen with 26-year-old All-NBA center Anthony Davis. Those were very different situations. Guys, even though they were the same age, that trajectory-wise appeared to be in very different parts of their career. Anthony Davis seems to be getting over his injury issues. Dwight Howard was just hitting his. But in the NBA today, everything is short-term. Kawhi Leonard just signed with the Clippers for 2 years.
Yeah.
It's very rare you get a guy and you know you're going to have him for the next 5 seasons, and that's the maximum anyone can know they're going to have a guy.
You mentioned tinkering with the roster. How much more do you think the Lakers have to tinker with this group of players, with this roster, for them to be in contention to win a title? And if so, what position do you think is the first they address?
Well, they don't have a bunch of flexibility until you start to see those veteran players that were either traded this offseason. They're not eligible till the beginning of the season to be traded. But right now, they have one roster spot available for them to be in the Kawhi Leonard sweepstakes and to get the type of free agents they were able to get. Rob Pelinka did well. They got a very good roster. They can play for a championship with the roster they have. They will be active as far as in the buyout market, the veteran market. When that comes around, the Lakers will be a viable spot for veteran players, bought out veteran players who will take the minimum and accept a role and have the opportunity to be able to play deep into the playoffs.
There's three rookies on the roster, Zach Norvell, Eric Holman, and Devontae Kukoc, that they have one open roster spot, and one of those guys could be moved in order to open another roster spot. They have another rookie in Horton Tucker, who was a second-round pick. I would imagine he'll be on the roster throughout the year. They obviously are interested in Andre Iguodala, but a bunch of teams are interested in Andre Iguodala. Unfortunately for me, J.R. Smith does not appear to be in their plans, and J.R. will hopefully catch on somewhere. But Kyle Korver's a viable piece. But those are just the guys we know about now. There's always guys at midseason, a team that thought maybe we can contend, realize they can't. They have a veteran on an expiring deal that they can't trade away. Those are the buyout players Chris is talking about.
And there's so much parity right now in the NBA, but you have to look at the big places. Houston will be in the market. The Lakers will be in the market to be able to get – the Clippers will be in the market to be able to try to grab those little players and everything. So the Lakers have situated themselves as good as possible, given that they were in the Kawhi thing until the last minute, the players they were able to get, even though it's not the roster that we thought at the beginning of free agency, how they might. I thought Rob Pelinka did a good job.
And big picture-wise, when you ask, is it championship or bust, I believe Anthony Davis is going to be on this team for a minimum of the next 4 years. So over the next 4 years, the Lakers will have far and away the best and most versatile big man in the West. When you look, there's not a lot of great bigs in basketball, but the versatile big, Joel Embiid, where does he play? Giannis, where does he play? Kevin Durant, where does he play? Those guys are all out East. There's Nikola Jokic, who is an outstanding offensive player, but limited defensively, and that's it in the Western Conference. So even if you're not as high on LeBron as I am, even if you just think he's a top 10 guy, if you have Anthony Davis plus LeBron, you are contending for titles for a minimum of the next 3 years.
Just don't call Anthony Davis a big guy. It takes offense to that. All right, let's talk some football.
Middle of Kansas.
Tom Brady, soon to be 42-year-old, gearing up for his 20th season in the NFL. And while most would dread the wear and tear of another grueling season, the six-time Super Bowl champ is fully embracing it. Brady is reportedly, quote, excited as ever entering this season, a season in which Tom Terrific will be the oldest position player in the league. All right, see, what can we expect from Tom Brady and the New England Patriots?
Well, let's go back to last season. I think that a lot of times when you're moving forward, if you go backwards, it will give you a better look at what kind of team they were. Last year, we thought that, man, they had a chink in the armor. They weren't going to be as good. Their stats were very, very telling. What were they? People say Tom Brady, Gronk. Man, they were a running football team. When they didn't run the ball for 100 yards, they lost. Five times last season they didn't run, and you could see Sony Michel, you could see James White, you could see them leaning on their offensive line, the offensive line coach. That's their advantage. In the playoffs, they slowed the games down, played a game like in the 80s and the 90s, the way the NFL games were played, played stellar defense, as we saw in the Super Bowl. You can expect Gronk retiring. Sony Michel, 1 year older. James White coming back. Edelman's going to be there in the slot from the beginning. That's the way they're going to move the ball down the field. It's not going to be pretty. They're not going to be taking a bunch of shots, deep shots down the field like Patty Mahomes and Kansas City or playing like the Rams. No, they're going to slow down the pace. They're going to make sure you don't get to Tom Brady. They're going to keep him fresh, try to get him to the playoffs. And just as easy as that, Jenna, they're going to win 12 games. On paper, do they look like it? No, but they're in the AFC East. It's been gift wrap for them the last 15 years. The incompetence, the inconsistency, the rookie quarterbacks, the changing of staffs, the lack of continuity in that division. That's why they've dominated, and that's why they'll win the division again this year.
Well, and last year you did see Brady in year 19. He had the lowest touchdown rate he's had in a decade. He had the highest interception rate he'd had in nearly a decade. He had his lowest passer rating in 5 years. You saw Brady, while excellent compared to the average NFL quarterback, below his regular standard. But how much of that was Tom Brady deteriorating, and how much of that was that they all year long, they brought in, what, 35 different receivers over the course of the offseason through the regular season? The problem for the Patriots is that receiver problem has not been solved. That question has not been answered. What they were searching for, by the, if you noticed a few weeks ago, They kept control, if you will, over Josh Gordon, a guy who last year they thought could have been a lifeline for them. They're still holding out some hope maybe he could come back into the fold because Philip Dorsett is their most reliable deep threat. They drafted N'Keal Harry in the first round, but it's very tough for first-round receivers, especially tail end of the first-round receivers, to make an instant impact. And now Gronk is gone.
Right.
So what Chris is talking about is their clearest path to victory is going to be excellent defense, very good running game, and trust your quarterback, who happens to double as not only the greatest quarterback ever, but arguably the most clutch quarterback ever as well, in the big spots to make a few big plays, because this isn't the 07 or the 2011 Pats where they have dynamic weapons that it's just going to be hard to match up against. You're going to see a lot of two tight end, that fullback that they love using, you'll see him, and they're going to try to beat you almost zig when the rest of the league is zagging, when we're becoming more of a finesse.
Which is
more,
their MO.
Absolutely.
Which is to outsmart another team, outscheme another team, and use Bill Belichick, which what he's really good at. But when you're a guy like Tom Brady, you have all these rings, you have all these accolades, your resume is so thick. What do you think motivates a guy like this going into, what, he's going to be 42 years old? At this point in his career, what do you think motivates Tom Brady?
He won't ever have a job like this. When people, for the last couple of years, they're like, oh, Tom should retire. Why should he retire? What do you do after being Tom Brady? I had a conversation with Peyton Manning this offseason. People were trying to get Peyton Manning to get back into football by broadcasting and everything. And Peyton pushing it off. But they're throwing so much money at him. Eventually, I believe Peyton will be in broadcasting. I believe after Eli retires, Peyton will get into broadcasting. But being around the game, there's nothing that will replace it. There's a lot of things that Peyton could do. But he's like, man, being there with the guys, there's nothing that will replace it. Playing there in New England, where they're going to have a competent game plan week in, week out, where he is challenged not only physically, but he's challenged intellectually on a week-to-week basis. That's the reason why he's one of the many reasons why he's been able to play so long. But Tom Brady is about trying to be the best ever. And he realizes that once he stops, there's not going to be anything to be able to do like this. And he enjoys playing football. And there's nothing wrong with that. Man, I enjoyed playing football. And if I could play it well, if I could have kept playing, I wouldn't have never went into television. Why would you? And I wouldn't quit if I was Tom Brady. Right now, still one of the best quarterbacks that we have in the game. And every year, they have a chance to win a Super Bowl after being the three straight. That's one of the main reasons to keep that run going.
And don't you think, like, when he looks back on it, because some people would say Tom Brady, well, I mean, he's already the greatest. So the mountain has already climbed and scaled and climbed again. Man, when Joe Montana retired, he was considered the greatest of all time. I bet there was a period when Joe Montana, when he saw Brady approaching, was like, man, Maybe I should have held on for a few more years. Right. Maybe I should have widened that gap. If he would have maybe won one with my Kansas City Chiefs when they got to an AFC championship game.
Joe Montana, the only reason why he stopped playing because he couldn't play anymore.
Right.
His body had given up on him. His back, his knees, shoulder. Like, he got knocked out of the game the way most of us do.
And Jerry Rice, do people, like, actually remember the last team Jerry Rice played for? Because it wasn't the Niners. It wasn't the Raiders. Was it Seattle? Because he wanted to keep going. Like, he, for most guys, we all remember Elway. But even Elway got to leave on top as far as a champion. But he didn't leave. He was get on his way to being forced out of the game. He could have kept going for another couple years, but when he won those Super Bowls, he wasn't the same guy that had gotten to the three previous. Sure. And so for Brady, when a lesser Brady, the one I'm talking about, is still, what, the fifth best quarterback in football last year during the regular season, he went to three straight Super Bowls, as Chris mentioned, something he had never done previously in his career. Even when they won those three early on, they didn't go to three straight. So going to four straight Super Bowls, nobody's done that since the Buffalo Bills. Like, there are still new things he can accomplish that no one else has.
They have made it with the collective bargaining agreement. The offseason, you have less practices. Training camp is less physical. So the taxing on his body, right now, he's probably in the best shape ever. With modern technology, eating the right way, all the things Tom has said, that's one of the reasons why you can play. Protecting the passer. Ever since he blew out his ACL when he got hit, the Kansas City Chiefs crawled and hit him on his leg, and the league changed the rules then, that extended his career. So there's a number of reasons why, but being able to be competitive, compete for Super Bowls, and this will be the best job he's ever had.
And last year, one of the lowest sack rates of his career. Chris talked about how they became a run-heavy team. They are asking him to do less and protecting him more when they need to because, A, they're going one direction when the league's going another, but, B,
yeah,
their personnel demands it. He's not in the level of jeopardy other positions are, other players are, and he's still playing at such a high level.
Time for stories to start your morning.
You can't even write a 5-2-40. Then you run one.
I love you.
What did y'all do to
so
get here?
So much.
What? I mean, I don't know. I tricked some people.
Oh, okay.
I love you so much. Mine was all verbal. A recent report says the Thunder are in no rush to trade newly acquired Chris Paul. Shockingly, suitors are not looking for a 34-year-old point guard who still has 3 years and $124 million left on his deal. Nick, how much does CP3 have left in the tank?
Listen, Chris Paul can still help a good team, but a good team doesn't have $37 million to pay him. So he's kind of betwixt and between here. When you see what the Thunder are able to get for Chris Paul, or maybe more accurately, what they have to give up to get someone to take Chris Paul, I think you might look at the Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook trade a little bit differently, but he's going to start the year on Oklahoma City. I'm pretty convinced of that.
Yeah, Chris Paul, he's got a bad contract. I mean, you think the first year, it's okay if he was in Houston. But now playing with a younger team, is he the guy that you want mentoring all these young players? I mean, he's had an accomplished career, but he has been tough to play with no matter where he's been.
Look for Minnesota maybe at some point to get in this game.
Moving on. Another player on the move could be Andre Iguodala, the former Finals MVP, could soon be traded from the Grizzlies, with reports that the Lakers, the Rockets, and the Clippers are leading the charge. See, where do you think Iggy best fits?
Well, it depends on who gets an injury. Because if someone gets an injury, man, especially a wing player, I mean, he can play with all those teams. He's a great locker room guy. Guys around the league have a lot of respect for him. He's a guy that's going to buy into whatever role that he's playing. That's what he did there in Golden State. Man, any of those teams, would help their roster to add Iggy to them, Nick.
He almost signed with Houston a few years ago. Remember that. If he gets bought out, I think all three of those teams will immediately try to court him. But as far as a trade goes, the only contending team that I could see actually trading for him is the Denver Nuggets. They have the contracts to make it work. He played in Denver, played really well in Denver. They think they can win the title. But I don't know if anyone's going to give up a draft pick to pay Iggy $17 million.
Do millennials know what courting is? Because you used that word.
Oh, okay. So the Nuggets might try to slide into his DMs.
Nope, you went too far. Nope, bring it back a little.
No, I don't have to bring it back. He said, I need to relate to the millennials and their rainbow toast and stuff.
I wish I could throw some soup on y'all.
JR. Moving on to JR Smith. Now, the Cavs waived the former NBA champ, and the Lakers are reportedly, quote, unlikely to reunite JR and LeBron. Nick, you think it's a mistake for the Lakers not to pursue JR Smith?
I mean, he would help, but if they only, I think Iguodala would help more. I think Korver potentially could help more. I'd rather have JR than Melo if they're saving that last roster spot for Melo. I think JR's got a little bit left in the tank. I think someone will pick him up. We knew the Cavs were going to waive him. They weren't going to pay him $15 million this year. This allows them to duck beneath the luxury tax, but I don't think JR's done.
I would like to see JR try to make a contribution on the team. But I can't forget last time I saw JR on a basketball court. And JR is not the type of person that with unsupervised time alone. That's what he's been doing the last year. Man. No practice, no organization, no travel.
That's wrong.
Doing whatever he wanted to do.
JR will always have those 8 points beginning the second half of game 7. Save the season for the Cavs, one of the greatest championships ever. Key part of it.
What year?
That's 2016, man. That's not that long ago.
3 years ago. Ending with Ben Simmons, who turns 23 on Saturday. And as an early happy birthday, Sixers gifted the former number one overall pick a 5-year, $170 million max contract extension. Surprisingly, only in that Simmons' game has been under a microscope since entering the league, you know, because he can't really shoot from outside. How many feet, Nick?
Outside of 16 feet.
I'm going to start the whole segment over.
No,
the Sixers, though, are clearly all in. What do you think, Nick? How much of the Sixers' future is dependent on Simmons and how much he develops that shooting game?
It's enormously dependent because both of their franchise cornerstones, there are question marks about. I know we pick on Simmons, but Joel Embiid's overall health and overall fitness and dedication to his body is a real question, and Simmons' ability to grow his game is a real question.
Which one are you more concerned about?
I think Joel Embiid is more likely for it to go terribly. Simmons is more likely to stay stagnant. If Simmons never improves, then he's a fine player, but not worthy of $170 million and not worthy of the stature he was given as the number one overall pick. Because when he was taken number one overall, everyone said, look at all the things he can do. Imagine when he learns to shoot. It's now been 3 years since then, and he hasn't added 1 foot to his range. That is an enormous problem. The point that I'm making is the reason when people talk about trading Ben Simmons, should Philly move off of Ben Simmons? I think one of the reasons they're hesitant to do this, and Zach Lowe talked about this yesterday, I thought he made a good point, is Joe Embiid's not Giannis. Embiid's not Anthony Davis. Embiid's not a guy that you know with utter certainty you can just say is going to be this level of player for the next decade. We know what his potential is. So the reason that they have to hold on hope to both guys is there's unknown factors with both of these guys. But obviously Philly is paying him on potential. They're not paying him based on what he is. What he is right now is a very good defensive player who rebounds great for his position, who has great size. But that is not worth $34 million a year over the next 5 years.
Wait, see, who do you think is more likely to fill their potential? Joel Embiid or Ben Simmons?
It's not even close. Joel Embiid. And he's closer to doing that. The reason why I have more confidence in Joel Embiid is because we're wondering, is his conditioning, is his eating ever going to be on par with the footwork and the other parts of his game that he went through all the tedious process of doing?
Correct.
So I've already seen he's already done it in his basketball game. The eating part, that's one of the parts that comes later. For younger players, for big guys, it's harder for big guys, especially as far as their cardio, as far as their knees, how much can their joints take with the pounding? But he has shown me that he has been dominant. Tell me one area where Ben is dominant. We're going to say, it's his all-around game. Now, he's an all-star. Joel Embiid is a superstar. And we got to make sure that we make the distinction between the two of them. Joel Embiid, of course, I have more confidence in. I don't think this is a bad contract. You have to sign Ben to this contract. I'm not going to continue just to talk about his inability to shoot. Everyone knows he can't shoot, last year's playoff run, longest shot he took, 11 feet. He's not comfortable shooting the basketball. It would be as if there was a great running back and someone wanted me to turn him into a wide receiver. And I've been like, okay, can he do it? Tyreek Hill was one to do it. I told Nick, I got doubts because most fast guys don't turn from track speed into wide receivers. Ben Simmons, we're trying to see if a non-shooter can become an efficient shooter. We don't even know if he's shooting with the right hand.
Yeah.
His free throw shooting. And what it does to other players on the team, because there's a half a body off of him in the lane if he's got the ball outside of 15 feet, because there's no need to guard him because he's no threat. So for me, all right, he's a very good all-round player. He's an all-star. But to me, this franchise should be built around Joel Embiid. And I wouldn't be surprised if Brett Brown, ultimately, they get rid of him, because I don't believe him and Ben Simmons are best for each other, because I don't believe that he's pushing Ben Simmons to be the best player he can be. And I wouldn't be surprised if Ben Simmons got traded. I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't make it through this contract and they used him to trade off to get another asset.
Nick, what comes with this contract? What are the expectations, realistic expectations from the Sixers? Compared to what he shot last year, it can't be.
Listen,
the
numbers last year are jarring and indefensible. And I have been a guy that has defended Ben Simmons, particularly during his rookie season. Said, listen, the guy is a rookie, was a fringe all-star. We saw what all the physical tools were. And I assumed that he would grow his game even a little bit. The problem for Ben is, if you look at tape year one to year two in the league, it's indistinguishable. All the things he was great at, he's still great at. All the things he's bad at, he was still bad at. I can't find one area he got discernibly better. He was shockingly good defensively as a rookie. He was just as good defensively as a second-year player. But the weakness is, it seems
so
like
glaring.
A broken record, but it is, when he took 25 shots outside of 16 feet all year.
The whole year.
And so Chris was just harping on this, his rookie season. And I kept saying, man, he's a rookie. He's 19 years old. He's already an excellent player. Give him time. And I still think he deserves time. And you still think he deserves time. But it is disappointing that after that, in between.
Do you remember watching tape of Jadeveon Clowney in high school?
Yes.
And in college?
Yes.
How much better has he gotten?
He's about the same.
Is he not the freakiest athlete that we have in the NFL?
Certainly on the
Ben Simmons list. And him are exactly the same. You can't expect all players that are just, I'm just going to appropriate. He's just getting ready to get better. Ben Simmons made one three-pointer in college. Has made zero, Jenna, the same as at this table, in two seasons, full season in the NBA. Not even a buzzer beater. Not even, he even won at half court, at halftime or something like that. He is not a shooter of the basketball. But I'm not mad about the contract. Al Horford had a max contract. There's other players out there that had max contract that are not superstars, but they're all-star. He's an all-star basketball player. If we could keep our expectations on that, I don't think we would be disappointed. But as the number one pick, as athletic as he is, as big as he is,
right,
he can go off the dribble, a great defender. For him not to develop a jump shot, it's criminal, because that's all he's got to do. You don't have to go to school. He don't have to work on anything else. The reason why we haven't seen any video, Jenna, you got more videos up there of him. You know the reason why? Because you're at the gym and you got a reason. You know what? Because people want to show off what they do. The reason why we haven't seen him showing off his shot, because there ain't nothing to show off.
And it's the disappointing part is, it's not the gap between him being an all-star and a superstar. It's the gap between him being an all-star and having the potential to be a league MVP, to have potential to be one of maybe the best player in the league one day, because at his size, his skill set, if he had even just a mid-range shot, he's almost indefensible. But he won't even shoot the ball.
And you have to hope someone's having this conversation with him, someone that he trusts and someone that will actually influence him.
I think it's tougher to have the conversation. He did deserve the contract, but it's tougher when he just signed for $170 million.
All right, let's move on.
Hard to make changes when I'm rich.
On to the NFL now. Cowboys All-Pro running back Ezekiel Elliott still has 2 years left on his rookie deal, so no need to start the extension talks just yet, right? Conventional wisdom? Not quite. Recent reports say Zeke could hold out of training camp and talks could go sideways if Dallas isn't proactive on a new deal. Man, it seems to be the theme these days. CeCe, what would the Cowboys look like if that actually happens, if Zeke holds out?
Ooh. You talking about Dak Prescott? Dak better not sign his contract if Zeke is not there.
No, he better sign it before they see him without Zeke.
No, I'm just saying for protection reason why. All right? Dallas Cowboys, they're not the offense without Ezekiel Elliott. Now, you're not going to take away a special player. I'm not going to make people think, oh, Zeke is just a normal running back. No, he's not.
It's in the Melvin Gordon situation.
No, come on, stop, man. Only things similar to them, they play running back. They're from the Big Ten. Listen, that's when everything starts to go in different directions. Zeke, since 2016, the only running back to average 800 yards a game. That's the most dependable. Besides Dallas Cowboys taking the field and that star being on their helmet, Ezekiel Elliott has been the most dependable thing since they drafted him. You knew he would be a great pro. You knew that he would be durable. Your question marks about him. The only thing, will he catch the ball out of the backfield? He has more than adequate hands out of the backfield. The screen game for Dallas is a huge part of what they do because he's such a great open field runner. He's the best running back in the NFL. Dallas is in a situation because of the precedent. The Rams were in the same situation that Zeke and the Cowboys are in with Todd Gurley, and Todd Gurley at that time considered to be one of the best backs in the league. They signed him to a contract extension. And you can believe with Zeke, with all those carries in his first 3 years in the league, he is going to hold out. And he wants his money because if you look at the lifespan of a running back, you have to look at their life totally different than the other players. And when you can demand that salary, you better hold tight on it because one injury. And Todd Gurley's a great example of it. John Wall in the NBA, he got his guaranteed money. Now he don't have to worry about it. Ezekiel Elliott, he really puts his career every single weekend at risk if he goes out there without a new contract.
And this is one of those instances where we can actually look back on a decent sample. What did the Cowboys look like without Ezekiel Elliott? Well, we know. In 2017, they were a 5-3 football team, and then Zeke finally had to serve that six-game suspension. The first three games of that six-game suspension, they were 0-3, and they were outscored 92-22. They averaged 7 points a game the first three games without him. Oh, they ended up rallying. They won the last three. But in that stretch, what did it do to Dak? Dak in that six-game stretch without Zeke, 190 yards per game, 5 total touchdowns, quarterback rating of 77. He had one good game that actually elevated that entire stretch against a moribund Giants team. He had threw for 175 against Atlanta. He had a 30 quarterback rating against Philly, a 61 quarterback rating against the Chargers, threw for 100 yards against Washington. Their offense ground to a halt because if he's not out there and all of a sudden Dak, instead of facing 8-man boxes, is facing 7-man boxes or even 6-man boxes, now his limitations as a passer come to the forefront. So, listen, he's got 2 years left on his deal. The Cowboys got to pay Dak, Amari, Byron Jones, Lyle Collins, maybe Jalen Smith. All those guys only have 1 year left on their deal. But he is so clearly their best player that even though he has 2 years left, he has an odd amount of leverage here in a season. The Cowboys, after winning their second playoff game in, 15 years, they think they can take a major step forward this season, making conference championship games.
What you know about Zeke and Jerry Jones and the way the Cowboys do business, does it get to the point where he has to hold out?
Yes, because Dak's contract is up, Amari Cooper's contract is up, and his visit to the commissioner's office did not help his contract situation.
And see, Stephen Jones, the Joneses have been very vocal about paying Dak. Stephen Jones back in May, I don't want people to forget, when he was asked about Zeke, he said, that's something I'm sure will get worked out over the next couple years. That was in May. Zeke wants it worked out in the next couple weeks.
Well, you wonder how much of that leverage has been lessened because of that visit to the principal's office by Zeke. Back here, First Things First, joined by FS1 NBA analyst Chris Broussard.
What's up,
good
brother?
To see you, brother.
How's it going?
Great.
Good seeing you, man.
Always
welcome back. That's
here.
A nice
Thank
suit you got there.
Thank you.
Good to have you. All right, Broussard, let's check in on the Warriors. Their trade for Nets all-star D'Angelo Russell is a bit of a head-scratcher. They already have arguably the best backcourt in the game in Steph and Clay, leaving many to wonder just how long D'Angelo would be there. But GM Bob Myers made it crystal clear, saying, "We didn't sign him with the intention of just trading him. Let's see how he fits." Didn't they say that about OBJ, too? We didn't sign him to
trade. Oh, yeah.
Broussard, how does he fit? How does D'Angelo fit with the Warriors?
I actually like this move. I mean, I don't like it as much as having Kevin Durant, but the fact that you were going to lose Kevin Durant, I thought this was a good move, and I don't understand why everybody is like, oh, they just got him to trade him. I think you give it a shot, see if it works, and if not, you can move him at the deadline, you can move him next summer, but I actually think he's a good fit. I think, one, with Brooklyn and Golden State, they played at about the same pace last year. He played fast, so I think he'll fit in with Golden State playing fast. A lot of people are saying, well, he was second in the league in pick and roll last year behind Kemba Walker. Golden State doesn't run a lot of pick and roll. He almost ran as many by himself as the entire team. However, Steph Curry ran a ton of pick and roll when Mark Jackson was the coach. And his numbers individually were actually better than they were under Steve Kerr when he won his first MVP, but Steph was able to adjust. I think D'Angelo can adjust. I think he's got all the skills needed to be effective in their offense. He can catch and shoot. He can shoot the three. He can shoot the mid-range. He can go off the dribble. He's a good passer. He's got the floater in the lane. He's a decent finisher at the rim. I actually think it's going to be good, and I think he's 6'5". He's a big guard, big point guard. But you could play he and Steph together in the backcourt, and when Clay gets back, I think you can play Clay at the three. Now, defensively, it'll be some challenges, but I actually think offensively they can work well together.
So they will have, even when all three come back or when Clay comes back, height-wise, they'll be okay because Steph is bigger than people give him credit for. He's almost 6'4". You mentioned D'Angelo Russell, 6'5". Clay's about 6'7".
Yeah.
So height, but defensively, if you are – Clay is an excellent perimeter defender, but he's, if you're going to ask him to guard the toughest position in the league, which is small forward, you could have some challenges there, particularly if Steph and D'Angelo are your two guys guarding the opposition's guard in the West. Whether you're playing the Rockets with Harden and Westbrook, you're playing the Blazers with McCollum and Lillard. Like, there's enough guard combos that defensively this team could be in a really rough spot. I understand why they did it. They did it to stay afloat. They did it because we all saw what the Warriors looked like with no KD and no Klay briefly in the playoffs. And that would not be fair to Steph. You couldn't, after five straight trips to the finals, say, hey, Steph, for 45 games, just have teams box and one you if they want to. And so, and to get an asset when Kevin Durant's walking out the door, I understand. But this isn't, the fit doesn't make a ton of sense. In my eyes, because of the pick and roll stuff, because of the defensive limitations, and you get him not to flip him this offseason, but to flip him, like you said, either at the deadline or next offseason for assets so you can try to recoup something for Durant a year later. I don't think you look at this team and you say they're worse with D'Angelo Russell, but they have an obvious ceiling even when Clay comes back, with or without D'Angelo Russell,
well,
in my eyes.
It was obvious that Kevin Durant was going to lead. And if you look at the options they had, if you lose a max player and you don't trade him, you don't get anything for him.
Yep.
So what options did they have? Right. Okay, we're just going to let KD go out the door. So just like Rob Pelinka, they did a great job after the Kawhi thing as far as how we're going to divvy up this money. They did a great job as far as filling out the rest of that roster. The Warriors did, it's the only thing they could do. Minnesota was ready to make a deal for D'Angelo, go there and play with the Timberwolves. They decided to be able to get them in a sign and bin trade to be able to make their roster. They picked up another asset. So for the organization, even if they weren't going to a new building, I can understand trying to put a competent team out there for that fan base with those prices they're going to be paying. But from a basketball operation, to be able to trade for another all-star, he does fit what they're going to do because there's two areas that Clay, if you look at when you tear your ACL, what would you struggle at? Number one on the offensive end, shooting those three-pointers, coming off those picks, he doesn't dribble a lot. So getting his hips square and his knees, getting them square to the bucket like he always does. He's a classic jump shooter. That I believe that will take a little more time. and on the defensive end, because that you are more vulnerable. You can't see pick and rolls. And guys, once they tear their ACLs, they are vulnerable to people being on their outside of their legs. So you can expect him to maybe lose a little tick on the defensive end. So you guys are talking about D'Angelo Russell now playing defense and Steph playing defense. And we can't expect Clay to be a shutdown guy that was in the finals. We should expect him athletically just to lose a little bit until the following season where he'll be closer to 100%.
I actually think when Clay is 100%, if this is the team with Clay, I think they're the third best team in the West.
Wow.
I really do. I think people – now, I don't think they could beat the Clippers or the Lakers right now, even with Clay. But I think people are writing them off way too early. I think their system – I mean, again, they didn't always have Kevin Durant. And they still won the championship and were a great team.
I agree. Listen, and I've been – and I have said for a long time that I thought the Warriors, absent of Durant, were a championship-level team. But they didn't just lose Durant. They lost their depth. They lost Iguodala. Livingston wasn't good for them last year, but Livingston was good that 73-win season.
But they did. They added – what kept Kevon Looney, Willie Cauley-Stein. Like, if they have Stein – Willie Cauley-Stein, Draymond Green, and a healthy Clay on the floor. That's three good defenders once Clay's healthy. You can protect. Now, again, the backcourt's not going to be good defensively.
But you can Portland's get through the regular season with that defense.
Yeah, they can't protect the rim. I mean, Willie Cauley-Stein has been a disappointment in Sacramento. He's come over. Wasn't a whole bunch of teams had interest in him. No. Looney is not a rim protector. Draymond is about 6'7", 6'8". Like, they don't have a lot of size on the court. So I can understand people saying they're going to be out of the playoffs and you saying, no, you're underestimating Golden State. But to think they're going to be one of the top teams, I saw them, man. And when you put Kevin Durant and you put all those minutes, him, Draymond, Steph, and Clay, you know what you lose? Developing younger players. And that's what you're getting ready to see now. Where are the younger players that they drafted and they're supposed to be now playing 10, 15 minutes? No, they haven't done a good job at that.
Yeah, I think they will be a playoff team. I've heard some people sit with speculate, could they be the odd man out? Lakers are going to be in the playoffs after not being in it. Somebody's going to be bounced out. Listen, I do not think they're going to miss the playoffs, but I think there's clearly – a minimum of five teams in the West better than them. I think Lakers.
Even with, now again, they're not going to have Clay.
No, even Lakers, Clippers, Nuggets, Jazz, Rockets. Slot them how you want. I think at the end of the season, all those teams will be better than them. But there's one element of this we haven't discussed, which is a team that for 5 years has not only gone to five finals and the wear and tear of that, but they are playing at that level. At the end of the year, that what gets you through the regular season is that carrot, which is we are the favorites to win a title. We can go win a title. We can set records. That's almost surely not going to be there for them this year. And then there's the personality issue that I'm really curious your thoughts on. Draymond Green expects a lot of money this coming offseason. There is going to be speculation all year that not only will the Warriors max him, but will they flip D'Angelo for picks, let Draymond walk, and all of a sudden have a max salary slot to offer up to try to bring someone else in alongside Steph and Clay. Throughout the year, Draymond's making $18 million. D'Angelo's making $27 million. You don't think with Iggy not there as almost a culture setter, you don't think that is a potential issue throughout the season?
No, because I think Draymond understands the situation. You know, he understands why D'Angelo's paid more than him. And I think, look, Draymond's in a contract year. And most teams understand he's in the perfect system for himself.
Yeah.
Going somewhere as a max guy, I mean, look, the Lakers obviously with Clutch, you know, Draymond's with Clutch now, they might be a possibility in the future. But outside of that, I don't know a ton of teams that would max him. So I think he's going to have to come out and have a great year. And I also think these guys are going to take this as a challenge. You know, everybody now that KD's gone, people think we're going to fall off. I agree with you. Without Clay, I don't think they're going to have a high seed. But if he's healthy 100% by the playoffs, then I think they could do some damage.
And maybe they could use that as motivation. Everyone's down on us. No one's got us. No one's counting us anymore. Take a little page out of the Eagles book. Back here with Chris Broussard. Broussard, when Chris Paul was traded to the Thunder for Russell Westbrook, many wondered how long it would take OKC to flip the nine-time All-Star. But shockingly, suitors did not come running for a 34-year-old point guard who still has 3 years and $124 million left on his contract, with a recent report saying the Thunder are not in a rush to trade him. Chris, how much does CP3 have left in the tank?
Well, I know last year he had career lows in points and field goal percentage. He's always been pretty efficient, shot 42% last year. But I chalk a lot of that up to the system and the fit. Now, I think the first year he was there, it worked because he was just all in. I'll do whatever it takes to try to win the championship. After they didn't win it, I think this year, I think the tensions mounted with him and Harden. He got more and more frustrated with the way they were playing. And I think that has something to do with his decline. But I think his game is still there. Not quite what it was, but I still think he could be very effective. He's in his 15th year. Steve Nash led the league in assists his 15th year. John Stockton was still fairly effective. I think he can be effective. The problem with Chris is two things. One, the contract. And his injuries. Like, injuries are just a part of his existence now. The last 3 years, he's missed over 20 games because of injuries. And by the time the playoffs get here, he tends to be worn down. And so that's the biggest problem with him. But I do think he has a lot of game left and could help a contender. The thing is this. As long as he's in OKC, it really doesn't matter how much game he has left because they're all in on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander as their point guard, and they should be. Mm-hmm. He's a great young point guard. You have to see what he can do. Is he the guy you want to build around in the future at that position? So, Chris, as long as he's in OKC, it's almost like he's going to be kind of off the ball some there, too, if he's playing or more in a mentoring role for, say, Gilgeous-Alexander.
With respect, I totally disagree with you on the fit part of it. Because year one, listen, Chris Paul, to me, there's two eras of him with the Rockets. Everything up until the end of Game 5 of the Western Conference Finals and of this first year and everything since then. Because that first year there, his numbers were almost identical to what he put up the last year with the Clippers. His points per game, his field goal percentage, his three-point percentage, his rebounds, assists, they were all very similar. And then last year, it was the injuries. It was his field goal percentage drops from a career of around high 40s, 46, 47, down to 42. His three-point percentage drops from being in the high 30s to 36%, 35.5% last year. All those numbers fell because, to me, he was even visually in a different place in his career. Defensively, he was not as dynamic as he had been. He was one of the best on-ball point guard defenders we had in this league for a long time, even though he's so small. So I still think he's an effective player, by the way. If there was no salary cap, if money didn't matter, you would absolutely want Chris Paul on your team, potentially. But the one thing that I think you also left out is there was a third thing that's hurt him. And that's his style of leadership. There's a quote, I forget who reported it, so I apologize, but that early on in this season, he and Harden got into something somewhat meaningless. And Harden looked to him and said, man, it's always something with you. And that it was about the set they were running. And that is a trend for Chris throughout his great future Hall of Fame career, is he grates on people. And I would imagine you grate on people even more when you're no longer the best guy on the team, when you might not be the second best guy on the team. So that's where the fit's going to be tough for Chris, because do you want him to mentor? Do you trust him to mentor young players? How will he be the first year, gosh, since his rookie season, where he's on a team that doesn't have championship aspirations? Like, these are real questions no matter where he ends up.
So, see, do you think this is the beginning of the end of his career, or do you think he's just had two sort of tumultuous years chemistry-wise in Houston?
No, it is. You can see the writing on the wall. And when you watch NBA players and you watch their skills deteriorate, none go faster than smaller point guards. That's just the way it is. My good friend Isaiah Thomas, he talks about it all the time. It's hard to age in the NBA as an undersized guy. He's had a great career, but this is not surprising. Nick talked about this a couple years ago. When that disappointment in game number 5, when he got hurt, and then they had that wink-wink agreement that they were going to give him that max deal, Nick was saying then, hey, man, it's going to be ugly at the end. We just didn't think the end
was going to be the beginning. Yeah.
But what got him out of Houston was their pursuit of a championship. But he spoke a lot of truth on his way out. Now, Nick talked about him and his leadership. Harden?
Sure.
Is he a great leader? Let's not get too carried away with that.
That's
one.
Totally fair.
The coach there, the owner, hadn't necessarily helped the situation. He's not a seasoned veteran as far as that's concerned. But we knew this was going to get ugly for Chris Paul. When he decided to go there, if they didn't win a championship, if they didn't get beyond Golden State, they were going to be, at least you could say, well, wow, he brought us a championship, so we don't mind paying him. But this is the life in the NBA of a great point guard at the end of their career. Where do we expect him to go out? Like, how is he supposed to continue to be athletically dominant as an undersized point guard? Man, he's shut down people for years. One of the top leaders in steals around the league. This is the way they age right before our eyes.
Yeah, no question about it. And when you look at who might want him, like Miami, that was the talk. They're not going at him that aggressively.
No.
Because even if you get him, what are they? A middle of the road Eastern Conference playoff?
They team? Didn't want to pay Dwayne Wade. And his jersey going to be in the rafters.
Right.
They had that little dispute. Dwayne had to go away. They brought him back, but not the kind of money they're paying Chris Paul. So if they didn't want to pay Dwayne Wade, why would they give Chris Paul that type of money?
I do think, though, last year, I think Chris Paul's morale dropped. Okay. And I do think that has something to do with his poor play. Again, I'm with you guys that he's clearly on the decline. But I think the first year he was just excited, hyped to be there, hyped to have a chance to win a championship in a different environment. Last year, I think his morale sank because of the situation with Harden.
And I think one of the reasons I'm higher on the Rockets' acquisition of Russ Westbrook than maybe the other people at the table is because I feel like the market for Chris Paul is going to prove to be minimal to non-existent. I think OKC is going to have to end up attaching picks to him to get someone to take him. And so when you look at where the Rockets were,
I don't think there'd be a great market for Russell if he was on the – if he could be traded – I don't think there'd be a great market. Not to Chris Paul.
No, I understand what you're
saying.
But
I think we would be shocked, too, because he's got a bunch of injuries, that wear and tear on his body.
He's got a similar contract situation. I understand that. But the point that I'm making is I think you're going to see across the league that Chris Paul, unfortunately, even though if his play doesn't say it should be, is looked at as a negative asset. Like his level of play, when you combine it with the contract, that you're going to have to include things to get someone to take him away. The Rockets obviously did include picks, but what they got back was a top 20 player in the league. The fit we'll see about, but I think Chris is going to start on OKC and then maybe Minnesota. Maybe they try to give Karl Anthony Towns a point guard for the first time in his career. Either way, there's no obvious fit for him.
Gotta take a break. You need some hot water. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.